open public input. We have a number of individuals, and I will call you up two at a time. I think most of you know the drill. 3 minutes, beeper will go off. You can finish your comment from extra few seconds or so, but that's about it. And with that, Steve Pedersen, come up, and Ken Miller, please. Steve.
Okay.
Yep, it's your turn.
Right. I'm here making some testimony regarding family forest landowners' bear depredation permitting. Chairman Smith and the commission members, I am here representing myself. I own two small tree farms, about 50 acres, have had bear damage on those, and as a consulting forester that manages about 5,000 acres of family forest land in southwest Washington with lots of bear damage. It's been 17 years since I last sat here and gave comment to the commission at one of your meetings. In that interval, I have obtained around 50 separate bear damage permits. It was highly stressful in the beginning, and it's gotten worse in many ways, albeit with occasional positive occurrences. Just one of many problems that was the recent unexplainable change in the several years protocol of delivering bear to one of our approved meat packing plants where they would store the skin pelts until they had a load for Centralia Fur Company to come and pick it up. The Region 5 head of enforcement said there should be no problem doing that, as we have for years. But our hunter had to go down to Raymond from Yelm, pick up the pelt that had been left on the carcass at the packing plant, and bring it back and drop it off at Centralia under threat to lose his license from the damaged folks in Olympia. In case there is any misunderstanding amongst WDFW staff and commissioners, those of us involved in this frustrating debacle do not want to kill all bears. We certainly do not enjoy the tension of what bombs will be dropped on us every spring, usually at the last minute. And we have a multitude of much more enjoyable endeavors we would like to pursue on our time and our money. I have written fully documented testimonials on the incredibly huge amount of losses we are incurring, attended meetings in Olympia to work out the bugs, and even gotten along with a couple of the WDFW field folks. I am retiring at the end of the year and am overjoyed at not having to go through another spring and have nothing to lose by telling it as I see it. I understand the commission only deals with rulemaking, where policies and procedures are the responsibility of the various departments. But I also know you, the commission, can set the tone for those department attitudes through either WDFW inexperience, ineptitude, and or indifference. This program has been a virtual nightmare for the family forest landowners that have been unlucky enough to have one or several of the state's bears set up peeing camp on their property. I urge you to get to the bottom of this, direct the department to make this a priority this year, and make your rulemaking that's to come in Spokane apparently incorporate that. If this situation was occurring within the agricultural community with their political power, there would be heads on a pike. We simply would like the respect for this to be taken seriously. I'll take any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pedersen. Any questions? Commissioner Holzmiller?
Thank you, Chair. Stephanie came and had reported to us about the major undertakings that she's in the process of, and I was wondering if Nate could maybe speak to the progress she is making and when we could maybe see some answers to some of these questions. Okay.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Mick Cope, Game Division Manager. Good morning. So, Commissioner Holzmiller, just an update on what's kind of transpired since June. We received many comments on those proposed rules that Stephanie provided a briefing for you in June. They had a very wide range of interests, and including small forest landowners, including cattlemen, including environmental groups. The comments were substantial enough that we wanted to make sure that any changes that were made were properly vetted and had opportunity for public comment. So we filed a supplemental 102 and have a supplemental 30-day comment period. Those comments that came into us in kind of big letter type of comment, we responded to those individually and provided rationale on whether we were considering a change or whether we weren't. So those went out most of them went out yesterday in response to all that comment. We've had specific conversations with different groups, including small forest landowners, including cattlemen. So we're trying to work through some of those things. I appreciate the insight that the gentlemen here are going to bring. We do want to work with small forest landowners on addressing their issues. A lot of their issues are coming because of some changes that may not actually be change in policy, but just a way that things are being implemented or different than what was done through the enforcement program. And I think it's taking some lumps to get through some of those issues. But we're definitely committed to working together and definitely committed to involving stakeholders in how we move forward.
Thank you, Mayor.
And I want to commend you, and I'm going to ask for this fellow to have a little patience, because the way it's been explained to me, where you're transferring these issues from enforcement to wildlife, to me makes a ton of sense. And talking with Stephanie, I think she's doing yeoman's work with this. And if it's any consolation, I really like to raise oat hay to feed calves, and I have given up on it because of elk damage. And I think it's one of those things that we're going to have to work through. I fielded a couple four-letter conversations the other night from some of my neighbors asking me what's going on, and that's why I tried to explain to them that we're in a process right at the moment of trying to go from here to there, and some rulemaking is being done. But hopefully, I'm optimistic, so hopefully that I hope you guys will stay involved. And if it ends up where it isn't working out for everybody, we can revisit it. But it is a concern, trust me, of mine with game damage, because we're trying to make a living out here. And granted, we all do what we do and live where we live because we want to and we enjoy the game, and we're not out to decimate them, but we still have to make a living. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Any further questions? Ken, good to see you. Calling up Howard Wilson, please.
Good morning, Chairman Smith and Commission members. I'm still Ken Miller, a small forest landowner with two tracts of timberland, two small tracts. You're likely tired of seeing me as much as I am tired of coming here and telling your tales of woe. At your last meeting, one of you asked how we're getting along with Stephanie, to which I responded somewhat jokingly that she seemed to be a really good listener, but she sure isn't talking much. And after that meeting, we met with Stephanie out in the hallway, and she promised a response to our long list of concerns well before this commission meeting. And as Mick just indicated, her busy schedule did provide us a response, but it was not till yesterday. But I'm really disappointed to report that most of the responses to our list of concerns were along the lines of the following quote from one of them: "This topic is one that we will address through the Bear Damage Committee and subsequently through policy and procedure." In other words, we got answers, but they really weren't answers. They were just more process. So that was kind of the the issue. And we understand there's a difference between between WDFW and what the commission does. But clearly we have a lot of process and much more volunteer time to get through before we have an indication of where WDFW is at on our long list of issues that we've been working for, in many cases, over a year. We had hoped that most of these issues and suggestions would be addressed in the wildlife interaction rule revision process that we understand has now been restarted a little bit. And it's also a process that's not likely to specifically address any or many of our mostly process issues. However, our concerns at this point include a concern that the rule revision process will not allow verbal testimony on the proposed rules unless we find a way to get to your Spokane meeting in September for essentially a West Side issue. We also have a concern that the rule revision process will not incorporate the small business economic impact statement that clearly delineates and mitigates the disproportionate impact on small forest landowners. We have a concern that the rule revision process will be completed without appropriate guidance to the department to better ensure respect and appreciation to those of us providing millions of acres of quality forest habitat for the state's critters. And finally, a concern our issues will be forgotten once you complete this rule revision process. So we do hope to provide additional written rule revision suggestions for your consideration before your decision-making process in October. We do recognize that Stephanie and Mick have a huge undertaking and apologize if it sounds like we're throwing rocks in their direction. We genuinely want to be part of the solutions that are long overdue, but we do want timely solutions that fairly respect our efforts, our concerns, impacts, and our contributions to the well-being of the state's critters. We believe that small forest landowners do matter. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ken. Any questions? Yeah. Commissioner Mankin?
Say that I've watched you and with your infinite patience for many, many years, almost since I was first on the commission. I do not understand why we haven't moved on this, and this is another one of those times is that you've been waiting since. I have a letter here from Jim Murphy, and he says that you've been waiting since May 2015 for an answer.
And that was we in part of our consultation with the department, we volunteered. They asked if we would really do a more thorough list of our concerns and have a discussion. Most of those were actually brought to Stephanie last September. And if you actually a lot of even those I've been working on for years with the department, and we seem to get a fix for a little bit, and then of course now we've changed the whole process. And I agree with Commissioner Holzmiller that the new process has hope of kind of changing things, and we have been very excited to work through this rule revision process, although I think in our simplistic minds we tend to look at the commission and the Fish and Wildlife as one entity. And I know that's not the way things really work. So we're a little off base once in a while, I think, in our comments, or maybe we're talking to the wrong audience. I don't know, but we're trying.
Well, I would hope you're not talking to the wrong audience. And I thank you for your infinite patience.
Thank you.
On this issue. I hope we can move a little faster here for you. And I would hope that staff is willing to communicate with you on an interim basis so that you're not left hanging out there anyway on some of these issues.
Our biggest fear is, because we've been down this road so many times, is that next April we'll be presented with some new processes and rules at the last minute when all we need is that damn permit so we can get going, and we don't have time to argue and fight and discuss about this stuff. We want to get it all taken care of. And I really believe that Stephanie and Mick and others want to get there. I do believe the intent is there. We're just not used to all the processes that they necessarily have to go through, and the time that it takes, and the committees, and blah, 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 on and on and on for what seems like mostly just real simple stuff. We'll hang in there.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always been a pleasure all the years I've been on the commission to have you two gentlemen and others from the Small Forest Owners Society to come and talk to us, but I would expect it's probably getting kind of old for you as it is for me. I would hope that, and I'm sure the director will engage on this, and I hope we don't have to see you next spring. Although you've been very professional in your presentation, I think it's time to get this thing done and move on.
I hope to come back next spring and say what a wonderful job, and it's all done, and we're happy, and thank you very much.
It wouldn't be spring without your smile. Any other questions? Thank you again, and I second my colleagues' comments about your perseverance and keeping our fingers to the fire. Thank you. Calling up Wayne Klein and Howard.
Good morning. I'm Howard Wilson, a small forest landowner with 400 acres of timberland, 120 of which is a hot spot for bear damage. My bear damage in the last 3 years is in the tens of thousands of dollars. I'm also the Washington Farm Forestry Association, WFFA, Animal Conflict Policy Representative. Ken Miller and I have been working with Stephanie in wildlife conflict for over a year. On May 8, 2015, I sent Stephanie a letter with 24 wildlife conflict issues that the Washington Farm Forestry Association felt were broken and which needed to be fixed. Many of these had been brought up by Ken over the years. It took 90 days to receive a response, which I got yesterday. Little is fixed. Most of it is policy as opposed to rulemaking. Most issues have been referred to a bear damage committee. Ken Miller, George Ziegeltrum from WFPA, and I have each briefly testified before the committee, but are not members of the committee. To my knowledge, no stakeholders are members of the committee. While the Bear Timber Damage Committee has met at least once, we have received no feedback that they are making any progress. Timber landowners have been providing input for over a year, but no policy changes have been made. I'm very concerned that our issues are being studied to death, and no one is willing to make the changes necessary to fix our problems. I ask that the Bear Timber Damage Committee be instructed to report their recommended fixes within the next 45 days. This year, I was still saddled with the problems we are trying to fix. I only got two tags for 120 acres, the same number of tags as someone with 40 acres would receive. After we killed two bears, the second one on June 9th, I had to apply for another permit. To get the permit, I had to prove that there was new damage after the second bear was killed. It cost me $500 in time and transportation, and I lost a day of work. I lost a week of damage control waiting for new damage to occur. Trying to find new damage on June 17th is ridiculous, as you can't tell the difference between damage that is 8 days or older before the bear was killed or 7 days old or less after the bear was killed, when the difference is only a week or so. If it's a month or 2 months, you can tell the difference, but when you're down at days, it's very hard. Additionally, if I had been given enough tags proportional to the size of my land where the trees were in danger, I would have had enough tags and not needed an additional permit. We really need your help and assistance. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Howard. Questions? Commissioner Holzmiller?
On your bear tag, now, is that something a hunter can come out, shoot the bear, take the meat, take the hide?
Currently, we're required, our only hunting option is either hounds or master hunters or use snares. I was using a master hunter. In the past, they had allowed master hunters at times to use bait and to also keep the bear as an incentive because they don't get compensated for their time or costs. This last season, that wasn't the case. The master hunters were not allowed to use any bait, which made it very hard. My hunter put in 80 hours on my property and luckily just ran into two bears, basically. He was really lucky. On another property he was working, he put in 90 hours and didn't get a shot. And also they weren't allowed to keep the bears, which not only doesn't give them incentive to hunt for us for free, but then we were saddled with the cost and time of giving the bear away. The hunter has to gut the bear. They have to get the hide down to Centralia fir. They have to turn in the gallbladder with that. And they're the only hunters that have to turn in the gallbladder. The spring hunters on the big forest timberland don't have to turn in their gallbladders. They get to keep the bear. Our guys don't get to keep the bear. And then they have to, our master hunters have to turn in the carcass. And in some cases, they have to pay $150 or we have to pay $150 to have the animal processed if the people that are receiving the donation require it to be processed. The Union Gospel Mission in Aberdeen, Washington will take a full carcass after it's been skinned. So it's a great drain. It's expensive. It's very time-consuming. To help my master hunters, I ran both their hides down to Centralia fir, and each time it was about a 140-mile trip for me to do that. And worse than that, there's little incentive for the master hunters. They don't get rewarded or even get to keep the animal.
Is Mick still in the crowd?
Yes, Commissioner?
I guess why can't we make this to where the hunter, I mean, that gives the hunter no incentive if all you got to do is come out and sit there for that time and shoot a bear.
Right.
I mean, it's more fun to shoot targets and you don't have to monkey with them and all of that. The baiting issue, yeah, I know, folks. But I personally don't have issues with hunting over bait because then you can be a lot more selective. You can get them out in the open. You can know what you're shooting at rather than just a bear in the brush.
Right. So thank you for the question, Commissioner. So the retention of the animal part, that's actually in the rule revision that is in that came to you in June, and it remains in there. So there is a rule on the books right now that says that they're not able to retain the carcass. So we're proposing to change that rule.
Okay, so you're going to address
that. It's already in play.
Okay.
And then on the baiting side, you know, there's an RCW that regulates that part and limits that action to agents of the state, and the AGs have counseled us that that's a pretty it's not a very well-defined thing because it's a contractual relationship with the agency, then that becomes an agent of state. There's different ways to get there, and it just wasn't that we weren't that comfortable with whether a master hunter became an agent of the state.
Can we work through that?
Yeah, we're trying to work through that part as well.
Okay, so you feel that you're going to address some of Howard's issues?
I believe we will, yes.
Okay.
One of my concerns on the rule revision, the current rule, I believe, says that they can't retain bear parts. The revision doesn't say that they can retain bear parts. It says that the rules will be spelled out in the permit. So it doesn't necessarily give us what we need.
The rule revision takes away where it's not allowed. And so that gives us the ability to allow somebody to keep it.
Including the gallbladder?
No, the gallbladder may still be a part that we need to keep track of for enforcement purposes.
Right. Has there been abuses of that you know of? I know in Michigan they just arrested several people.
Of gallbladder?
Marketing gallbladders, yeah.
Yes, I'm probably not the most knowledgeable on that subject, but I know through time there has been issues, and I just probably couldn't give you the statistics right now.
But with the gallbladder deal, those are the guys who are going to drive up and down the roads.
Right, yeah.
With spotlights and whack them. I mean, you're not going to file for a dang permit and spend all the time out there just for a gallbladder. I mean, that isn't the idea. So, I mean,
they fetch a lot of money.
Solution looking for a problem? I don't know. That's kind of the way I would take that one. To me, we need to – what these guys are asking for is nothing but what's right. I mean, we should be bending over backwards trying to work with these guys and simplify stuff, not make it more.
And I believe that we're trying to get there. The stepwise process in our mind is that we needed to get the rule revisions put in place so we could back the policies up with rules that supported that. So that's the step that we're going through now, get the rules approved. And the changes, then write the policies based on those.
Connie?
My question is,
Why don't we have a representative from the Farm Forestry Association on the appropriate panel?
You have one on the commission.
No, that's a good suggestion. We've been working through some issues with internal folks so we can understand what our field staff are going through and what their recommendations are based on the things that they see and how they end up dealing with issues. So we wanted to make sure we listened through field staff eyes as well, which is why we invited the forest landowners, both large and small, to give presentations to kind of give that perspective as well. I like the possibility of bringing in that experience and having it more involved. So I'll definitely think about that as we move forward.
I can't understand why there's not somebody on there now. I mean, these are important people. They represent huge chunks of land when you total it all up. Why aren't they represented? So I think it would be a nice move.
Yeah.
At this, and it would improve communication, frankly, if we had somebody there.
Yes, I agree.
Thank you, Mick. And further? All right. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, sir.
And calling up Jack Field. And Wayne, you're going to take us from fur to fins, right?
That's right. I guess I'm starting to be a little familiar. I know this morning you're going to be talking about fish for the next several hours, and we're going to hear catchphrases, adaptive management, recovery. I've been to a few meetings this month in Mount Vernon, or in the past month, and I've also attended a few meetings in the private sector, and nowhere, every time the question gets asked, what does recovery look like, we never get an answer. Nobody knows. Nobody has any idea what recovery, what that picture is and what it's going to be. So, and I understand it's hard to define. I couldn't do it. So I just want to point out a couple things while we're talking about fish and stuff. One of the other catchphrases, adaptive management, which I think is kind of what's going on right now. But I would like to point out that the future population numbers of steelhead is never going to be what it was 150 years ago or 200 years ago. There's just too many freaking people here. And the habitat, we've all benefited from the habitat degradation. We all drive on roads. We all live in houses. We all get electricity from the dams. So we need to kind of, I think, zero in on trying to manage what's left and improve as much as we can without telling everybody to pack up and move to Oklahoma. That, you know, let's try to take care of what we have left. And I hope somewhere in the statewide steelhead management plan and the populations at risk and all this, that we don't just consider it a success to have harvestable numbers of fish. I think catch and release fishing, I keep saying this, my very first time down here, I told you guys it was probably the wave of the future. And I know it's going to rankle a lot of people if that's all they're allowed to do. But right now I'm sitting at home and I cannot fish at all for steelhead, period. I mean, the last hatchery batch swam up the river last year and they're gone. So anyway, I just think that, especially on the Skagit, this catch and release fishery that Occupy Skagit has been going after for years now is essentially low-hanging fruit. It's just right there. The fish have done the hard part. They're there. They're back. There's thousands, nearly 10,000 this last spring. So as you hear all this stuff this morning and as we move forward, I just hope that we can remember that fishing opportunity does not always have to mean harvest. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you. We've been talking about this issue for 3 or 4 years as well, and the director, could someone, Jim, I don't know who, tell me where this issue lies, because the feds say it's in the state's hands, the state says it's in the feds' hands. Can we get some clarification on what we need to do to get this catch and release fishery up and running?
Well, we're going to have a couple sessions later in the day, and Jim, will you cover that specifically then?
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Calling up Dave Duncan and Mr. Field.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Commission, for the record, Jack Field, Executive Vice President of the Washington Cattlemen's Association, to take us from fins back to fur. I'd like to thank the Commission for your recent decision and step forward to increase cougar quotas in areas of wolf occupancy. We appreciate that step that the Commission is taking, understanding that previous management strategies have caused significant heartburn amongst cattlemen and livestock producers throughout the state. The issue of wolf recovery, depending on the region of the state we're in, further exacerbates that issue with an additional predator that we lack the state's ability to effectively manage with the federal listing in the western two-thirds of the state. We believe that your steps on the harvest quotas are a very important step forward. We again thank you for that. Appreciate you staying the course and realizing that sound management needs to be the cornerstone to game management as well as species recovery. To switch gears just a little bit, I'd also like to ask for a little help from the Commission. The Washington Cattlemen's Association has sent a letter to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's been some months ago. I'm in the process to follow up again, requesting clarification on the service's role and responsibilities in the effect of wolf livestock impacts or conflict in the federally listed western two-thirds. We're very fortunate to have the commitment from the Commission and the Department in the eastern one-third, where we're federally delisted, and the state's actually able to manage wolves in that portion. I live in the western two-thirds, and there's a big question mark. We've got a plan in front of us, but really no way of no clear way to implement that with that federal listing and the ambiguity between the service and the state and how we're able to really move forward. Perhaps if something came from the Commission, you might get a little better response than what industry stakeholders are able to get, but we'd like to work closely with you on that to help in any way we can, because the only way we're going to get to recovery is if we can effectively demonstrate management. The other issue, too, appreciate the efforts of getting the Wolf Advisory Group going. I'm a member of that. We've had one meeting. We'll be meeting again in September. I hope we're going to start to tackle some of the tough issues that we've talked about, like what post-delisting looks like, what management in Washington State looks like, and what the future holds. You'll see a lot more of us as we come, but again, we appreciate this. We've got some big issues ahead of us, and we need to be ready as we move forward. I think your conflict staff on the ground are doing wonderful work. We need more of them. They do great jobs. Please thank them anytime you get a chance. We're very fortunate to have them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Field. Any comments, questions? Calling up Bill Cybercup, please. And Mr. Duncan.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Dave Duncan. I live in Ellensburg, Washington. I'm a member of GMAC and also on the WAG. I'm testifying today for Washingtonians for Wildlife Conservation. My stakeholders are supporting the Commission and the decision to increase the cougar quota and lengthen the season. As most of you know, I've been here many times. I'm a rural resident. As a rural resident, I've lived in the same house, same property for 30 years. Never saw a cougar, never had any problems until about 10 years ago. Now I've got cougars in my driveway, around my house. Had one attack my dog, or my wife's dog, which is worse. I was able to get out there and stop the cougar. It was kind of a little fight. It cost $3,000 to save the dog. I'm a cattleman. This year I had a first calf heifer that calved during the nighttime. Cougar got the calf. I autopsied the calf. It had been licked, and it had milk in its stomach, but she just wasn't as tough as my old cow, so that's another $3,000 loss. As a hunter, our mule deer in Kittitas County are suffering greatly. There's hardly any deer in the wintering areas. Most of the deer in the valley, are, most of the deer in the county are in the valley floor. They've been pushed down there by predators. Never saw a mule deer on my place for 20 years. Now I got lots of them, which I enjoy very much, but they should be in the hills. And in talking to the biologists in the Wenatchee pack, not the Wenatchee, excuse me, the Kanaway pack, I guess the wolves there are pretty much keen on mule deer. Even though we have an abundance of elk in that area, they're keen on mule deer, and that concerns me greatly. And most of these losses that we have, I think they're kind of unacceptable to us rural people. I don't think that these young displaced cats, we need to figure out how to manage them. The bulk of the hunters and the cattlemen are not, we are not opposed to predators on the landscape. As much as we hear people saying that we are opposed to them, we're not opposed to them. What we do want, though, is management of all of these predators as part of the whole. And that is not happening. And you know, our industries, the cattlemen and the hunters support what might bell go off. Okay.
Not literally.
We support rural communities and the department. We feed people. I got one other little subject. Can I talk about it?
5 seconds.
I'll try. You know, a bell curve exists within our segment of the population, and we, as far as predator management, and of course we have some outliers. The leaders in our industry are striving to steepen this bell curve by educating outliers and working the problem. Some other stakeholders produce white papers on the ecological and social complexity of lethal control of predators. No mention of management of the predator as part of the whole. This just throws gas on the flames and creates more outliers and flattens the bell curve. Thank you for taking this baby step of managing predators as part of the whole. Anybody has any questions?
Questions? No. Calling up Rob McCoy and Bill.
Hi, my name is Bill Sievercrop. I'm president of the Washington State Cattlemen Association. I'm a rancher farmer from Ephrata, Washington. I'd like to thank the commission for this opportunity to testify today. The management of cougars, wolves, the predators, it's very important to the livestock industry. That's our livelihood. We need to be able to, you know, if we could increase the quota of the cougars numbers, and because that's a big, the cougar prey issue, you know, the deer population, everything, that's a big economic value to communities. Mostly the smaller communities where, you know, the deer hunting and everything's a big deal. And we need to look at the prey base, which affects, you know, getting back to the communities and the hunters and all the sportsmen. I guess to finalize the population of the cougars, you know, we need to increase the quota, the amount of cougars that can be killed, so, you know, the effect on the cattlemen, and like Dave talked about, his private dogs and everything that are have been attacked. So at that, I would like to thank you for your time, and I guess if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions from the commission? No. Thank you, Bill.
Yep.
And calling up Jake Weiss. And Rob?
Hi. My name's Rob McCoy. I'm a wildlife biologist for the Macaw Tribe. I'm a member of the GMAC, and I'm a hunter in Washington as well. As a biologist, I've conducted years of research on ungulate population dynamics, as well as predator-prey dynamics, specifically with cougar and bobcat influences on black-tailed deer and Roosevelt elk. I'm here today in response to the recent challenge from the Humane Society and other similar interested parties in regards to changes in cougar harvest quotas in select eastern Washington hunt areas. As a biologist, I was interested in conducting a hindsight analysis of the hunting season since the new framework went into effect in 2012. So I requested the cougar age data from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I found that the data set was complete for the 2012-13 and 13-14 hunting seasons and focused on these years as many teeth for the most recent season hadn't been analyzed yet. For the analysis, I considered cougars 0 to 2 years of age as subadults and anything 3 years and older as potential territorial adults that would count towards the quota or harvest threshold. I looked at the 12 hunt areas where the quotas were raised and found that in 8 of 12, the harvest threshold was not reached in either year. In 4 others, I found it was only met at the lower level in 3, on 3 of them, and in only 1 did the unit reach or exceed the harvest threshold. What's striking is that the harvest was largely composed of subadults at 59%. The data for the 2 hunting seasons analyzed using a conservative definition of what constitutes an adult territorial cougar indicated the average number harvested per year, which would count toward the quota, was only 29.5. The quota at the maximum threshold was 71, and it's only going to increase to 92 in the same hunt areas, which has been viewed by some to represent a cougar Armageddon on the landscape. Both the data and the mechanisms for harvest utilized don't support their concerns. Boot hunting will still be the only legal method for sportsmen. In the absence of legal hound hunting, there's no reason to suspect harvest will change dramatically at any point in the near future. Okay. However, the data analyzed infers that the there's an extra month added onto the season, and the data analyzed infers that the month will have little impact on the overall harvest, as 75% of these harvests in these units occurs during the fall when hunters are pursuing elk, deer, and other species, and drops off dramatically after January. Any small increase observed will likely be offset by the harvest being comprised primarily of subadults. There's only one area that has shown it consistently will produce at or above the established threshold, but if you look, there's only one additional cougar added in the new plan coming up. I encourage the Commission to hold firm to the changes for the 3-year cycle, as the increases are minor, are unlikely to result in significant increases in adult harvest using boot hunting, won't jeopardize the long-term persistence of Washington cougars in Washington, and as harvest is variable from year to year, it will take a few years of hunting data to judge the effects from the increased quota. And I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCoy. Any questions from the Commission? Thank you. Then calling up Elizabeth Ruther.
Ruth? I gave you this attached so you can.
Right, there's an attachment here that we all have. So, Mr. Wise?
Good morning. I'm Jake Wise. I'm an active conservationist. Like the preceding comments, the petition to modify the adopted cougar harvest quota, or any consideration to revisit this in less than the established 3-year study period, should not even be open for consideration at this time and should be rejected. The Commission has an established process with the 3-year hunting setting process whereby the public is allowed and actually encouraged to comment, and the public comment period for the 2015-2017 hunting seasons concluded on the 24th of February. This process includes a stage, and this is in quotes, after public comment, department staff will develop recommendations for consideration by the Fish and Wildlife Commission in March and April 2015. These recommendations will be based on the biological needs of a species, and it continues. The Commission adopted the 2015-17 plan on 10th April, and entertaining this petition now is inappropriate and unnecessary. Cougar, as with all wildlife, should be managed based on the sound science and accurate data and not from emotional knee-jerk reactions. In order to establish the accurate data, Washington DFW uses a three-year data collection and analysis cycle. Attempting to make meaningful decisions from limited data over an abridged period will lessen the ability to accurately assess the biological needs of the cougar and could easily result in hysteresis, whereby the commission is annually readjusting quota without the ability to identify truly sensible harvest objectives. The established process allows for comment and is based on sound biological principles to the benefit of all species. This is not an annual event or one that should be opened haphazardly in response to emotionally fueled ideologies toward a specific animal. The facts are that the three-year hunting season setting process provided the needed time to collect and review the scientific data, to hear, consider, and consider public opinions, and to make educated decisions regarding the needs to adjust wildlife management, quotas, and practices. Despite what the petitioners claim, the actual data, as was just explained by the preceding person, actually, clearly indicates that the quota set by the commission, based on staff inputs, is the best interest of all the animals it serves. Data over the preceding period shows that the majority of cougars harvested are sub-adults and within the newly adopted management objectives. The scientific basis was used by this commission to establish the harvest quota in April, and public comment was encouraged and allowed through February. Without the use of dogs, cougar hunting in Washington has become opportunistic, typically by hunters in pursuit of ungulates. This greatly reduces the ability to target and select mature cougars, as the data shows, and results in a larger percentage of sub-adult cougars being harvested, which continues to allow harvest at levels at or below the objectives that have been set and will continue as such. As a reminder, the cougar is not endangered, it's not threatened, and as confirmed by this Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife's own research efforts, is expanding into urban areas. Washington has an established process for managing wildlife, including the game management plan and the three-year hunting season setting process. All of the state's big game animals harvest objectives and subsequent quotas are part of this three-year process based on scientific practices with an appropriate time to attain meaningful data. The cougar harvest quota, as singled out by special interests, is not a topic that should be or need be entertained by the commission at this time and should be rejected. Thank you for the time. Thank you for listening. And sorry we had to spend the time to discuss it.
Okay. Thank you. Calling up Jim Goldsmith. Elizabeth.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Ruther, and I'm the Northwest representative for the Defenders of Wildlife, and I'd like to take a moment this morning to talk about the feathered creatures on the agenda today. On behalf of our members and supporters here in Washington State, I'd like to thank Commissioner Thorburn for requesting a briefing on the northern spotted owl and marbled murrelets. Defenders is deeply involved in conservation efforts for both of these species. We have reviewed the slide presentation and applaud the department staff for the excellent overview that you will hear today and appreciate the advanced posting of the presentation. I just want to add a couple of comments for you to consider while watching the presentation today. Regarding the future of spotted owls in Washington and the department's role, Defenders agrees that forest health and fire, barred owl, private landowner incentives are important issues that need to be addressed. There is also the need for the department to look at strengthening and improving the state forest practice rules. Recent demographic modeling of spotted owl populations demonstrates that 100% probability of extirpation from Washington under status quo policies without additional spotted owl habitat. It's plain and simple. Revising the existing forest practice rules for spotted owls adopted in 1996 is long overdue. WDFW's role on the Forest Practices Board makes the department a key player. The department can and should help the board better align the forest practices rules with the habitat protection needs of the species in order to substantively contribute to spotted owl population viability in the state. On the topic of the future of the marbled murrelet in Washington, Defenders appreciates the department's proactive work, particularly the at-sea monitoring and ongoing research efforts. There is also a need for increased attention by the department in the development of the long-term conservation strategy under the DNR's conservation plan, and HCP, excuse me. Be- because of the absence of federal forest land in southwest Washington. State-managed forests are critical for providing nesting in the central portion of the species range. Large continuous blocks of forest habitat, known as marbled murrelet management areas, were identified by the state as the best means to meet its legal obligation under the HCP to, quote, make a significant contribution to maintaining and protecting marbled murrelet populations in western Washington. The department should work with DNR to ensure that the long-term conservation strategy protects all of these vital habitat areas on state-managed lands. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I hope you ponder these recommendations during the presentations, which summarize data that paints a bleak future for these old growth-dependent species. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Ruther. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Calling up Richard Lorinsky, please. And Mr. Goldsmith?
I would like to thank the members of the commission for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Jim Goldsmith, and I live in Thurston County. I am a member of Washingtonians for Wildlife Conservation and other organizations that have clear missions to promote and support wildlife conservation and management by wildlife professionals through the use of sound and unbiased science. I'm here to speak as a hunter, a sportsman, and a conservationist. I would like to comment on the petition recently submitted by the Humane Society of the United States and other similar organizations to the Commission and Governor Inslee regarding cougar quotas. I am opposed to this petition and respectfully ask that the commissioners vote no regarding the petition. My initial motivation to speak was prompted by a quoted comment made by the HSUS Washington State Director in a recent Public News Service article. The comment implies that the quota change appears to be targeting cats as a way to appease folks that want to shoot wolves but can't. I am personally offended by such a broad characterization that implies hunters just want to go out and shoot predators and that the commission is just appeasing hunters. Hunting is a legitimate wildlife management tool and also provides sustenance to about 275,000 hunters in Washington State. Wildlife management is managing people, wildlife, and habitat. These components of wildlife management are not mutually exclusive. They are interdependent, and they all need to be managed together to ensure healthy and sustainable wildlife populations. Our wildlife managers need to be able to use adaptive management practices to accommodate the changes that occur in wildlife populations or their habitats, just as they do by opening or closing fishing areas or changing catch limits based on prevailing conditions throughout the season. This is necessary to ensure healthy and sustainable wildlife populations in addition to controlling interactions between humans and wildlife. The petition demands a public comment period regarding the quota change. This is a departure from wildlife management by wildlife management professionals using sound and unbiased science. Wildlife management should not be based on public opinion or pressure from animal rights organizations. The petition also implies that the reference science concludes causation versus a statistical correlation of selected data sets from which a hypothesis or theory is suggested. It must be made very clear that correlative science does not prove causation. Unfortunately, statistics is sometimes misused to mislead people. Please vote against the petition. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Yes, Mr. Walker.
We've heard some good testimony on the petition question. We'll be deciding that August 21st at our conference call. And I just wanted to thank you all for taking the time to come here and talk with us. You know, I realize that this issue raises passions on both sides. And unfortunately, sometimes we are not in a position to review petitions during commission meetings. Most often we take them up during conference calls because they're a threshold decision whether to move forward with rulemaking or whether to defer or not take up rulemaking for some time. And most often people are not able to call in and listen to our conference calls. So I thought that this is the opportunity that you all had to come in and talk with us about your views so that we understand them before we vote during the conference call. And I'm hearing from a number of people that the one of the fundamental questions here is this, the question of whether hunting is counterproductive to conflict reduction. Do we get more conflicts if we hunt? Do we get more management and less conflicts if we allow hunting? So there's two different viewpoints, it seems, and there are some who are advocating that the best available science indicates that it's counterproductive to hunt cougars and other predators, creates more rather than less conflicts. I think that is an essential question that we have to look at, the commission should look at in detail, and really look hard at this science. There's another camp that believes that, as you have stated, that the science is not there to connect hunting with an increase in conflicts. So I have proposed, I just wanted you all to know, that I've proposed having a workshop to drill down and look at this science and determine the level of certainty that we have with the science, what is shown and what is not shown, as you mentioned, causality versus a correlative relationship. And I have proposed that we, as a commission, before we make any decisions about whether to embrace this concept of hunting being counterproductive, we seriously spend some time with scientists who have various viewpoints to look at that question very, very hard. In my mind, it's a dangerous path to head down, to start embracing the notion that hunting in circumstances like these is counterproductive. So thank you for your comments.
Yeah, thank you. If I might, just a quick comment. The two words is correlation and causation. And if you were to focus on something, it's just go in and drill into that, because that is the issue. Mm-hmm. And when they refer to these scientific studies, from what I've seen, they're correlative studies, which results in suggested theories or hypotheses. You know, they're not fact or causation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Holzman.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I would like to thank you, because I thought you did a very good presentation to us, and I want to thank the people that have came out and spoke in favor of this. It is, in my part of the world, yes, we need to live by the science, and whether we question the science or not, we still need to live by it. But it still has to be socially acceptable, too. And when you were saying that the people that couldn't shoot a wolf, they go shoot a mountain lion, that isn't the point. We all enjoy in wildlife. And that's part of the reason why we do what we do. I'm a rancher, because I do enjoy the game. But we just have to find some balances, and it needs to be socially acceptable. And, no, I just wanted to thank you and thank everybody that came and spoke to this today.
Commissioner Key.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you also. All the testimony was excellent. And I would like to agree with Commissioner Wecker that is the heart of the issue, and I appreciate the comment on correlation and causation. And I think some of the big stir over this decision comes from the fact that for many years that I've been on the commission, we've received a lot of staff briefings on cougars, on the research that the department itself has put together, and there was a number set of a quota of 12 to 16%, with an average of 14. And I never had heard any science, or whether it was causation or correlation, state that it should go above that. So it was kind of a surprise, I think, when that decision was made to go above it. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying, and agreeing with Commissioner Wecker, that I think we've got to really dig into that. Because on either side of this issue, you can say, follow sound science. Well, what is the sound science? I think there's confusion on that right now, and I think we need to get it cleared up before this a good sound-based science decision can be made by this commission. I'm a hunter. I'm not opposed to hunting cougars, but I think it's got to be based, just as several people have said, not on emotion, not on anything other than what our science is telling us, and there is questions right now about that. So, again, I appreciate the comments, and I appreciate Commissioner Wecker's comments and agree wholeheartedly.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Goldsmith. And calling up our last input, Steve Franson. And Richard?
Hi, just clarification, last name is Lipinski. I just put the R's for the Richard. I appreciate the fact that I'm allowed to be here. Also, the fact that it's 2 days, because today's a work day, and I was planning on coming tomorrow, but I have a meeting in Ellensburg with the enforcement division. And so I decide to brave I-5 from 20 miles north of Seattle and have make it an adventure. I agree. I'm a hunter and a fisherman. And I agree and support and appreciate the increase of the commission for the 12 units. In listening to some of the comments here on science, et cetera, this increase, I don't believe, is a MEDAC's approach to doing things. From what I understand of the 12 units, there's only been one of those 12 that had either equal to or one more cougar killed. I think the decision to increase it is prudent. I mean, we have this thing called a wolf that has increased, and I'm sure the meetings with you folks, when that's brought up, you say, oh, boy, we get another wolf meeting. It is not the most fun thing in the world because the emotion that play into it. But the fact that this is a three-year deal, okay, in 3 years, if it doesn't work or it doesn't matter, it can be stopped. But the science followed by practicality, I think, is prudent, which is that. And the history of the mountain lion, the cougar, got the label of predator. I don't know if any of you have eaten mountain lion, but I have. I've eaten several, and they are excellent. So that in the history since I've been around, they at one time the state of Washington paid $75 for every mountain lion that was killed. And that was a lot of them down in Pacific County. Then it went to no more money was paid out. And then it was unlimited for those guys that had hounds. It wasn't that. It was only a few people that had them. Unlimited. And then as things got moving forward in history, you could kill 10 a year, and you had to report it. Then if the history moved on, you could kill, I'm not sure how many, but you had to be drawn in order to kill a mountain lion. And then it became that these were a trophy animal. And that's when they got regulated. So we're just in a situation where they're a trophy animal. We have the wolves' interaction with that area, and it's something new. Some people call it new and exciting.
Yes, Commissioner King.
I appreciate all this testimony, and I've eaten cougar too, and it's excellent. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get back to the point I think that I skipped over was I don't believe if anyone looks at the science on the effects of this change that the commission made on populations of cougars, I don't think there's any doubt in most people's minds that it would have any dramatic effect. And then, like as Rob McCoy suggested, if you count up the numbers, it's not a large amount of cats. It's really not. But it goes back to this science that we've been presented, and it's counterintuitive. And Commissioner Wecker mentioned that too, that it's intuitive that if we kill more cougars, we'll have less problems. And there is a science-based study, and we have to look at that more thoroughly, is that it's in counterintuitive that if we kill more cats, it could cause more incidents or problems with people. That, to me, is the heart of the issue, and I don't know that I know the answer to that right now, and I think we need to know the answer to that to move forward. But I appreciate your comments and everyone else's.
Yes.
Yeah, and I, again, want to elaborate a little because all of you people were so gracious to come here long distance to share your views, and we really do appreciate that. And I differed with Commissioner Keeney in the vote. I was in favor of the increase in the quota. But this is a point that we agree on, that the science, this is at the heart of something very, very significant for the department. And there is good science and there is bad science. There's science that is certain and there's science that is very uncertain. So you really, it's an easy thing to say best available science, but very often there's controversy about science. So in this case, it's crucial that we look into this question of whether hunting of predators leads to greater conflicts or fewer conflicts. And I can tell you that we've heard extensively from the other side, from Humane Society and defenders and other members of the conservation community, that they feel they're very fearful that if we they accept the science that shows that hunting will create greater conflicts, not fewer, and they're very, very worried about that because they do not want polarization to increase. We've already got plenty of that in our state. So they don't want us to adopt a policy that will just aggravate the problem, and that's their perspective. So I hope through this process that we look hard and use it as an opportunity for the public to understand that you just can't accept science without critical thinking. And that's what I think we are faced with now is exercising some critical thought. How good is the science? Does it really tell us what some of the scientists who are responsible for the studies are telling us it tells us? You have to take everything with a grain of salt and use your own thought process, use your own brain. So I also wanted to say that if we do end up doing a workshop to focus on the science, it will be open to the public because if the full commission meets, it is always open to the public. And I think it will be a great opportunity for some education about this very critical question.
Well, just on the fact that there would be more if the hunting was increased, would be more interaction. To me, logic says if you've got, they're territorial, and if you have a cat that's running around an area and that cat's taken out, it's going to create a void where there's going to be no more interaction. I don't see how that would create. I mean, to me, it's not logical. Yeah.
Okay. Real quick, I need a correction for the record. I wasn't here for the vote on this issue. I was in Hawaii doing other things. But the commission did take this up again at a later point in a teleconference, and where we left it at that point was, okay, this is where the direction we headed. Let's relook at it in a year when we have a little more data that's come in from the current direction that we've taken on whether there's been more incidents, how many cats were actually killed because of this change. Then what changed after that, because that was the direction we were headed, which I felt fairly logical, was a fairly logical move, we have received a petition. So that's why we're back on this, because this, you have to answer to this petition.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lipinski. And Mr. Franson, you round us up here.
Okay. Good morning, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. My name is Steve Franson. I'm from Olympia. You heard from Wayne, the ringleader, but I'm a supporter of Occupy Skagit. And you commissioners have so very much on your plates. But I don't want you to forget about the Skagit River steelhead fishing season. So I was really excited to see the steelhead management plan briefing on your agenda, and that's why I came down this morning. But I have a few other comments. One is the recent effort devoted to designating wild steelhead gene banks in Puget Sound. I'm not against that. Most people that I know aren't. But the steelhead hatchery steelhead lawsuit notwithstanding, Puget Sound is already a 65% hatchery steelhead-free zone anyway. So it just seems like the higher priority ought to be the Puget Sound steelhead management plans, the Skagit most particular. There are some other anomalies in the statewide steelhead management that didn't add up for me. As you've probably heard, but we've seen, that the Puget Sound steelhead incidental take of these ESA-listed fish is capped at 4%. However, for Columbia River B-run steelhead, it's 15% to the treaty tribes and 2% to the sport take, and the lower Columbia tributaries to a 10% take after a 1 or 2% mainstem Columbia River take. So it finally occurred, it didn't take a lot of research to discover that's not science. That happens to be more like the coincidental pre-existing harvest rates that occurred in those areas at the time those populations were listed under the ESA. So Puget Sound, being steelhead, being the most conservatively managed, proves yet again that no good deed goes unpunished. And now Puget Sound we're capped at this 4% level, regardless of the health of individual populations, barring basin-specific management plans, which I'm excited to hear about. Another thing that occurs is, as we've seen with the Puget Sound steelhead populations, smolt to adult survival rates seem to be better at the North Sound, worst at the South Sound, with the Nisqually and the Puyallup, Nisqually especially, being particularly bad. A difficulty arises because Puget Sound steelhead rivers have hard value spawning escapement goals. But in the Columbia River Basin, wild steelhead are managed to not exceed either a specific mortality or mortality rate. At the north end of Puget Sound is the Nooksack River Basin. It's data poor because in the springtime when steelhead spawn, the river's muddy and the department lacks data. But couldn't a similar management style be applied to limit mortality to a rate or a take limit? Because you will never have the data that you do for other rivers, and just want to keep that in mind as the management plan development goes forward. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Any comments, questions? Thank you all. I'll second what my colleagues have said. We appreciate you taking time out of your day and traveling to share your concerns with us. It does help us. It educates us. And your passion is appreciated as well. So thank you. It does educate us, I think, in across the board. So with that, we will bring to a close the open public input part.